One of the great and challenging questions, which I would really qualify almost as a dilemma that we struggle with in Jewish context, and that philosophers outside of the Jewish religion have struggled with as well for many generations, is the concept of Bechira Chofshit, the idea that man has free will, regardless of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, knows precisely everything and knows precisely our direction and what is going to happen in the future. How we deal with this free will, obviously from a religious and Jewish perspective, part of the Yugimul Ikarim, the 13 monuments of faith of the Rambam Maimonides, clearly requires us to recognize that man has free will, choice to decide between good and evil, what is right and what is wrong. But nonetheless, this concept of free will, of Bechira Chofshit, is so challenging to the extent that the Rambam Maimonides himself, at the end of Hilchot Tshuva, to a certain extent raises his hands in defeat and says, V'kvar amarnu she'en koach ba'adam leida heach yada hakadosh baruch hu dvarim she'atidin lihiyot. Warns the Rambam that regardless of the fact that we can indulge and search with introspect and understanding in an attempt to comprehend what this issue of free will really means, nonetheless, says the Rambam, we have already stated, Ein koach ba'adam, man is not capable of completely understanding how HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol, God, does things in this world, and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give us free will, regardless of the fact that he knows precisely what will happen in the future. And this concept of free will arises a number of times throughout these few parshiot that we are involved in. Parshat Shemot, Va'era, Bo, and even in Beshalach. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu give man free will? And at the same time, the Torah clearly states, V'chizakti et lev paro, V'chibadeti et lev paro, V'chibadeti et lev paro. I will harden Paro's heart. I will alter his direction so that he will not ultimately let Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, and so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol could punish him deservingly, both him and his nation. How are we to understand the concept of Chizakti et Lev Paro, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would harden Paro's heart, regardless of the fact that man is or has Bechira Chofshit, free will? The Ramban explains that it is true, everyone has free will. Even Paro had free will in fulfilling the decree, Va'avadum v'hinu otam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram that there would be a foreign nation that would persecute the Jewish people and enslave them. Paro was merely fulfilling what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu at the Brit Ben Abtarim, the covenant of the parts. So what was Paro doing wrong? Yes, says the Ramban, it is true. Paro was fulfilling the mantra of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, he was Mosif Rishut al Rishuto. There is this concept of being evil, wicked, bad to the Jewish people, and fulfilling that mission of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected to happen, as painful as it might be, to his nation. However, Paro did not have to be, so to speak, l'chumrat ha'inyan. He did not have to be so machmir, l'havdil, so stringent in his fulfilling or fulfillment of this decree. Paro went and added evil to his wickedness. He reached such a low, such a point of lack of compassion, of lack of regard for human life, more placing babies in the mortar of the bricks in Mitzrayim. At such a point, this behavior is inexcusable and unacceptable. As a matter of fact, it reaches a point of, or that is, beyond the patterns of comprehension. Such deviant behavior, such wicked exhibition, that it is unfathomable and undeniably impossible for mankind to understand. Yes, when Paro reached that level, that low, when he sunk to such deviant behavior, then it was deemed punishable by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that was his bechira, his choice, Paro's choice, to be such a rasha, such a wicked person, not merely fulfilling the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in enslaving the Jewish people, but taking it to the nth degree of cruelty. That was unacceptable. And it's interesting, there is a similar experience that is exhibited in this week's parsha. In Perek Yudalid Pasuk Dalid, a fascinating insight the Ramban Nachmanides reveals to us. The Torah says that when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, we all know the story. The Mitzrim turn around and say, "Hey, now the Jews are no longer with us. What have we done? Why have we let them go so willingly? Even though they have already absorbed the effect of the Makot, the plagues, that virtually destroyed the entire country and populace. Nonetheless, Paro decides once again to pursue the Jewish people, even into the bowels of the sea, even after witnessing the miraculous hand of God, by which he split the sea for the sake of the Jewish people. Paro continues. Says the Ramban as follows, "V'chizakti et leiv paro v'radaf achareihem." HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, "I will harden Paro's heart, and only then will he pursue Bnei Yisrael." Why harden his heart? "Ki birotam shenikra hayam lifnei Bnei Yisrael." Says the Ramban, how could it be? The Mitzrim, the Egyptians, see Bnei Yisrael walking through the sea which was parted exclusively for them. V'hem olchim b'yabasha betocho. And Bnei Yisrael are walking in dry land, in the heart of the sea. Eich yimal am libam. Lavo achareihem lehera lehem. How could it be that Paro conceivably would decide to pursue them? It doesn't make sense. Any human being with decent logic would say, let's leave them alone. Let's not take a chance. Obviously, they are God's people. Obviously, they are being protected by a higher source. Ve'ein b'chola moftim kapela hazeh. Says the Ramban, this is the greatest miracle or wonderment that happened in the entire story of Mitzrayim, that Paro nonetheless would pursue Bnei Yisrael. V'zeh be'emet shiga'on lahem. Says the Ramban, it is inconceivable, not understandable with regards to Paro and the Mitzrim's reaction to pursue Bnei Yisrael. Aval sachal atzatam, sikel atzatam, v'chizek et libam likanes bayam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened the heart of Paro and the Egyptians, and they pursued. The lesson that we learn from this Ramban is very vital. All of us, at certain times in our lives, exhibit patterns of behavior that may even be interpreted as ruthless behavior. All of us exhibit patterns of behavior at times that are absolutely inconceivable and certainly not understandable. But no matter what stares us, and no matter what slaps us in the face, and sometimes reality is so cruel, nonetheless we choose to ignore the consequences, as dire as they might be. Why? Because we grow self-absorbed. Because we have our own personal agenda of grandeur. And many times that serves as our greatest defeat. And yet the Ramban calls upon us and reminds us, Rabotai, there are times when even our behavior, the Havdil, not to compare ourselves to Paro, but that we have to recognize that our behavior is inexcusable. And sometimes we need to see the miracle in front of us to realize that we are not behaving correctly, that the path and the direction that we have chosen is downright wrong. The Havdil, I am not comparing by any stretch of the imagination a Jew to Paro, but I think that the lesson of the Ramban with regards to Paro and Mitzrayim can be adapted to us as well. It is virtually impossible to comprehend what is Ehud Olmert's case with regards to Annapolis, with regards to a comparison of Eretz Yisrael and what we're doing, or doing in quotations, to the Palestinians, in his comparison to apartheid in South Africa. I have struggled to understand where Olmert's decisions are coming from. And it would seem that the only way to comprehend or semi-comprehend what Olmert is doing is that here is someone who is so self-aggrandizing, who is so immersed in self-absorption, in sycophant behavior, that he simply does not realize that he is making a mistake, that he is causing or placing Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, in a perilous situation, and that he is willing to completely compromise the security and the future of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, the land of the Jewish people. There was an article which was written a few weeks ago. It was published, and it's called Outright Defeatism, in which the commentator writes, the guest columnist Izzy Liebler writes, that without exception, appeasement, self-deprecation, and preemptive concessions to terrorists have inevitably served to embolden them. Israel's experience has demonstrated that our enemies are restrained when they perceive us as being resolute, and conversely, they become more violent when they sense that we are losing our resolve. Prior to Annapolis, presumably to please the Americans, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert initiated 3 preemptive concessions. He unilaterally suspended the quartet-endorsed requirement that the Palestinians curtail terror before negotiating an end of conflict. He dispensed with the need for defensible borders by agreeing to return to the 67 boundaries with minor modifications. And he permitted his deputy to float proposals relating to Jerusalem, which included handing over jurisdiction of the Temple Mount to the Palestinians. Having already squandered most of our bargaining chips without getting anything in return, all that is left is the Palestinian-Arab right of return, which would amount to the end of a Jewish state. This mind-numbing appeasement by Israel continues unabated at all levels. Instead of at least remaining silent, Olmert repeatedly recites the politically correct mantra that Mahmoud Abbas is a man of peace, despite his failure to clamp down on his own gunmen or curtail vicious incitement against Israel, which continues to dominate all areas under his jurisdiction. Olmert released hundreds of terrorists, despite the realization that Abbas still maintains control of his Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, which murdered more Israelis than the Hamas. He also authorized the provision of weapons and armored cars to Palestinian security forces, ignoring the fact that on every previous occasion when arms were provided, they were subsequently employed against Israelis. Our policy of appeasement, has also led to an erosion of our global standing. That was reflected in Annapolis when President George W. Bush omitted to restate his previous position that demographic facts on the ground, settlement blocks, had to be taken into account. He also made no reference to Israel's need for defensible borders. Indeed, following Annapolis, Condoleezza Rice even criticized Israel for building homes inside Jerusalem's Har Chomah neighborhood. Olmert's outburst prior to the election, when he told a gathering of the Israeli Policy Forum in New York, he said, and I quote, "We have become tired of fighting, tired of being arrogant, tired of winning, tired of defeating our enemies." That statement will haunt him for the rest of his political career. So I don't know how much more of it is left. But if that were not enough, Olmert went one step further, giving the impression that he had truly taken leave of his senses, taking a cue from Jimmy Carter, who had been castigated for his offensive remarks condemning Israel for practicing apartheid. Olmert told the Israeli media that the nation risked becoming compared to apartheid-era South Africa, and if the two-state solution is shattered, the state of Israel is finished. What is this, if not outright defeatism? Can one visualize a prime minister in any normal nation making such absurd remarks? It is said that a country gets the leader it deserves. Woe unto us if this be true. Food for thought at the Shabbat table. It is so crucial for us to analyze, for us to exasperate over, just as the Rishonim did in their time with regards to free will and Bechira Chofshit. It is incumbent upon all of us to take the time to reflect, nay, to analyze and try to understand. And if not, and if we come to the conclusion that there is a point where leadership reaches absurdity, then it is time for us to take action and to ensure that once again, stability, logic, comprehension, and understanding is reinstated and restored in our land of Eretz Yisrael. Shabbat Shalom.